Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, China is strengthening federal controls over its territory of Macau. The area, like Hong Kong, is officially called a special administrative region. For many years, Macau has operated with wide self-rule powers as part of China's one state, two systems policy. But recently, China established a cooperation policy between Macau and the mainland city of Guangzhou. It also placed restrictions on businesses called casinos and manipulated a local parliamentary election. The new partnership with Guangzhou includes changes in tax laws and other policies. The aim is to move Macau's economy away from the gambling industry and toward fields such as finance, high technology, traditional Chinese medicine, and others. Ben Lee is a casino advisor in Macau. He told VOA by email that China never wanted gambling to become the biggest part of Macau's economy. He said China also never wanted Macau to be economically dependent on the mainland. The new casino measures are designed to limit the number of gambling operations and involve government supervisors in casino operations. American companies operate 6 casino businesses in Macau. Lee said that fact has fueled China's increased control on the gambling industry. Lee noted that Macau's gaming industry earned $45 billion in 2013 and $37 billion in 2019. This represents money that flowed out of the Chinese economy into and from Macau, Lee wrote, adding that much of that money went to the United States. In July, 21 people seeking election to parliament were barred from the competition. All were members of opposition parties. The parties sought legal action against the government decision, but their appeal was denied in court. The parliamentary election was held in September. 42% of the voting population took part, the lowest level since China took control of Macau in 1999. The head of elections in Macau reportedly blamed COVID-19 and bad weather for the drop in voter numbers. The European Union criticized the interference in Macau's election as a violation of rights guaranteed by Macau law. The Macau government answered by condemning the EU statement as an example of outside interference.
South Korea has launched its first space rocket to be completely developed and built in the country. But the rocket failed to successfully deploy a test satellite into orbit after its launch Thursday. South Korean television showed a live broadcast of the launch. The 47-meter rocket lifted off with bright yellow fire shooting from its engines. The rocket is called Nuri. It launched from the country's Naro Space Center, which is on a small island off South Korea's southern coast. President Moon Jae-in watched from the space center. He said the rocket completed all its flight stages just as it was supposed to. All this was done based on technology that is completely ours, he said. But Moon added that the rocket then failed to place the test satellite into orbit. Unfortunately, we did not fully reach our goal. Moon praised the workers and said although the mission was incomplete, the project would press ahead. It's not long before we'll be able to launch it exactly into the target trajectory. Moon said the launch demonstrated the country's progress and promised that the Korea space age was coming. Nuri is the country's first space launch vehicle developed and built completely with South Korean technology. The three-stage rocket is powered by five rocket engines to complete its first and second stages. Another engine is used during the rocket's final stage. The rocket is designed to carry a payload of up to 1.5 tons to an orbit 600 to 800 kilometers above Earth. Science Minister Lim Hae-suk told reporters the mission failed because the third stage engine stopped burning about 50 seconds earlier than expected. This prevented the payload from reaching the right speed to reach orbit. Officials from the country's space agency, the Korea Aerospace Research Institute, said debris from the test payload was expected to land in waters south of Australia. The agency said it was planning to form an inspection committee soon to study what went wrong and to make plans for the next test launch. Another attempt is planned for May. After depending on other countries to launch its satellites since the early 1990s, South Korea is now trying to become the 10th nation to send a satellite into space with its own technology. Officials say this ability would be important for the country's future space projects. South Korea plans to launch communications satellites as well as its own military intelligence satellites. The country is also hoping to send an explorer to the moon by 2030. South Korea launched another space launch vehicle from the Naro spaceport in 2013. That vehicle, named Naro, was a two-stage rocket built mainly with Russian technology. Naro's launch came after years of delays and a series of failures. The rocket reached the desired altitude during its first test in 2009, but it failed to release a satellite into orbit. Then, during a second test in 2010, Naro exploded shortly after takeoff. I'm Brian Lynn.
Stay, a song by The Kid LAROI and Justin Bieber, has recently been at the top of the Billboard Hot 100 chart in the United States. Let's explore some of the grammar behind the words of the song. In today's report, we will explore two lines in some detail. You will learn about the noun thing. We will also discuss pronouns and negations. Let's start with the following line. Pay careful attention to the singular noun thing. It is one of the most common nouns in everyday speaking. Thing has several somewhat complex meanings. But in the song Stay, the word thing suggests an action or activity. If you were to rewrite the words of the song and keep the same basic meaning, the statement might be something like this.
I do the same action that I told you I would not do.
You will hear Americans use thing to suggest an action in many kinds of everyday situations. For example, a student might say,
When I get home from school, the first thing I do is take a nap.
Or,
Before I go to bed, the last thing I do is brush my teeth.
Let's explore another line from the song. The line starts with the imperative form of the verb know. In this form, the subject, you, does not appear. Let's continue with a few more of the words. Pay careful attention to the words, I can't find nobody. Nobody is a pronoun. It means no person. This suggests a negation. But notice the words that come before nobody also suggest a negation. I can't find, which is short for I cannot find. This produces a kind of double negation. I cannot find nobody. This structure is generally not acceptable in traditional grammar. If you were to write the statement on a test, for example, you might want to use a different pronoun, such as anybody. For example, you could write, I can't find anybody. The point of this explanation is not to criticize the words of the song. Instead, it is to draw your attention to how pronoun usage might differ between what you see in traditional grammar books and what you might sometimes hear in popular music or shows. In today's report, we explored some of the words of a popular song. Take what you have learned to study other kinds of materials, books, movies, news reports, and so on. Pay careful attention to the noun thing. Consider what it could mean in the situation that you find it in. And also pay close attention to pronouns such as nobody or anybody. Doing so will give you a clearer idea of how pronoun usage differs between formal and informal language. We will explore more popular songs, films, and shows in future Everyday Grammar programs. I'm John Russell.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 1860 was a year of mixed feelings of hope and fear. Americans had hope for the future because they would be electing a new president. But they had fear that even a new president could not hold the nation together. The states of the South were very close to leaving the Union over the issue of slavery. Tony Riggs and Frank Oliver talk about the candidates and the issues in the election of 1860.
After 4 years as president, James Buchanan decided not to run again. Buchanan was a Democrat. His party, like the nation, was split over slavery. Southern Democrats wanted the party to support slavery. Northern Democrats refused. The opposition Republican Party expected to gain votes from dissatisfied Democrats. Republicans had become stronger since the last presidential election in 1856. They felt their candidate would win in 1860.
The Democratic nominating convention opened in April in Charleston, South Carolina. Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois was the leading candidate. He had the support of a majority of convention delegates. But he did not have the two-thirds majority needed to win the nomination. Many Southern Democrats did not like Stephen Douglas. Some did not trust him. Others did not accept his policies on slavery. Douglas did not oppose slavery or the spread of slavery. However, he said no federal law could make slavery legal in a territory where the people did not want it. This was his policy of popular sovereignty.
The Southern Democrats who opposed Stephen Douglas were led by William Yancey of Alabama. Yancey wanted to get a pro-slavery statement into the party's platform. He was sure Douglas would not accept the nomination based on such a platform. If Yancey failed to get the statement he wanted, he would take Southern Democrats out of the convention and out of the party. The Committee on Resolutions considered three platforms. One platform declared that the people of a territory had the right to decide if slavery would be legal or illegal. The second declared that the Supreme Court had that right. And the third declared that no one did, that slavery was legal everywhere.
Your country, how came it yours? Before the pilgrims land
William Yancey spoke to the convention in support of the pro-slavery platform. He said pro-slavery Democrats did not want to destroy the Union. But he said someone had to make clear to anti-slavery Democrats that the Union would be dissolved if the constitutional rights of slave owners were not honored. Yancey spoke of the danger of a great slave rebellion. He described it as a sleeping volcano that threatened the lives, property, and honor of the people of the South. He said the actions of the North might cause that volcano to explode. Another convention delegate answered Yancey's speech. He said Northern Democrats were tired of defending the interests of the South. Now, he said, Yancey tells us we must agree that slavery is right. He orders us to hide our faces and eat dirt. Gentlemen of the South, he said, you mistake us. We will not do it.
In this atmosphere of tension, it was clear that a pro-slavery platform would not be approved. The Alabama delegation announced that, therefore, it must withdraw. The delegations from the other six states of the Deep South, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, did the same. Those 50 men organized their own convention. They approved a pro-slavery platform, but did not nominate anyone for president. They agreed to meet again a few weeks later in Richmond, Virginia. The Northern Democrats postponed their nomination, too. They agreed to meet again in Baltimore, Maryland.
The Republican Party held its presidential nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. There was no question who was the leading candidate. He was the best-known Republican in the country at that time, Senator William Seward of New York. The Republican platform seemed to contain something for everyone. For those opposed to slavery, the platform rejected the idea that slave owners had a constitutional right to take slaves into new territories. For foreign-born Americans, it supported their right to full citizenship. For manufacturers, it proposed a new tax on imports to protect American industry. And for those in the Northwest, it called for free land for settlers and federal aid to build roads and canals. Delegates approved the platform with loud cheers. They would return the next day to nominate their candidate for president.
William Seward was sure he would win the nomination. If not on the first vote, he thought, then on the second. But there was some opposition to Seward, and his campaign organization failed to see its strength. The candidate of the opposition was Abraham Lincoln. The Republican convention voted three times. Lincoln gained support on each ballot. But neither he nor Seward received enough votes for the nomination. Then, before a fourth vote could be taken, a delegate from Ohio asked to speak. The big room became silent. "Mr. Chairman," he said, "I rise to announce the change of four votes of Ohio to Mr. Lincoln." That was enough to give Abraham Lincoln the Republican nomination for president.
1 month later, the Democrats reopened their nominating convention. Most of the Southern Democrats who walked out of the first meeting came back. Many of their seats at the convention had been given to new delegates. So a new dispute arose over which delegates had the right to be there. A compromise plan split the seats between old and new delegates. But most of the Southerners rejected it. One by one, a majority of each Southern delegation walked out. The remaining Democrats then voted for a candidate. They chose Stephen Douglas. Southern Democrats nominated their own candidate, John Breckinridge of Kentucky, and a group called the Constitutional Union Party nominated John Bell.
The election campaign opened in the summer of 1860. Lincoln was not well known, so the Republican Party published many books and pamphlets about him. They told the story of a poor farm boy who educated himself and, through hard work and honesty, had become a candidate for president. Lincoln's supporters organized a loud and colorful campaign, complete with marching bands and signs. Lincoln himself was silent. He said, "It has been my decision since becoming a candidate to make no speeches. I am here only to see you and to let you see me." In fact, it was Lincoln's assistants who had advised him to say nothing. They believed he had said enough in the past to make clear his position on the important issues.
Stephen Douglas, on the other hand, campaigned very hard. His health was poor, and he had trouble getting money, but that did not stop him from speaking in almost every state. Within a few weeks, however, Douglas recognized that he had no real hope of winning. His position on slavery had cost him all support in the South. Douglas believed that, of the other candidates, Abraham Lincoln had the best chance of winning the presidential election. He also believed pro-slavery extremists would use Lincoln's election as an excuse to take Southern states out of the Union. So he turned his efforts to a campaign for the Union itself. He said, "The election of a man to the presidency by the American people, under the Constitution, is no reason for any attempt to dissolve this glorious nation."
Election day was November 6th. The popular vote was close between Lincoln and Douglas, but the electoral vote was not. Lincoln received 180. Breckinridge received 72. Bell received 39. And Douglas received just 12. Abraham Lincoln would be the new president of the United States. He would enter office facing the most serious crisis in American history. For before his inauguration, Southern states finally acted on their threats. They began to leave the Union.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.